Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. There's no set schedule, it's just whenever I finish a book, I do the review, stick it up here on the podcast feed for everyone to download and listen to. Joining me today is Juliana.
Hello everyone.
And today we are going to be talking about a book which was suggested recently, I say recently, in January, on the SFBRP listener group on goodreads.com. So if you ever want me to review a book, there's two ways to make it happen. One is become a Patreon supporter and support us at the $25 a month level, and you get to suggest a topic for a podcast, which we normally do that for, like, juggling stuff, like juggling videos, juggling on the juggling podcast and or live stream or discussions like that. But if you're an SFBRP listener and you support us from just 1 month, at the $25 a month level, we will review any book that you suggest.
We've done a few of them.
Yeah. We won't say if it's a really bad book. We're not saying that we're going to finish the book. And I won't always do a hate read or a hate review. So the second way to get me to do to read a book isn't by giving us money. It's to get together. Go to the SFBRP listener group on Goodreads and post in the thread called Books I Would Like to See Reviewed.
Yes. It's quite a long list by now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's like 13 pages of stuff. But that goes back like 10 years or whatever.
Yeah.
The latest one is Ziven, who said... Ryan and Ziven are talking about Amatka by Karin Tidbeck and Vita Nostra by Marina and Serhii Dyachenko. And I actually started reading that one, Vita Nostra. Was creeped out by it and didn't really enjoy it, so stopped reading. And,
okay.
And that's what Ziven said. Yeah, I vaguely remember Luke saying he tried and didn't connect with it. But Amatka by Karin Tidbeck, maybe I'll read that one.
Okay.
So it says Amatka is 1984-esque, and Luke had interesting ideas. So what's happened there is Ryan has recommended a book, and then Ziven has said, I back up this thing, so I'm much more likely to read it.
Yeah,
but
more people do that, the more likely it gets.
Yep. Back in January 30th, though, this is Ryan again. Previously it was Ryan. I really enjoyed I Who Have Never Known Men, which was billed to me as an influential work of feminist speculative fiction from the 1990s. Speculative fiction. The audiobook is only 6 hours long and held my attention all the way through. Hmm. I'd say that the term speculative fiction. Why can't I just say speculative fiction might be better than science fiction, but you've previously reviewed books that I would say the same thing about, such as Flowers for Algernon or The City in the City, so I figured I'd suggest it. Just want to put this out there. There is nothing at all about Flowers from Algernon or The City in the City, which makes me think that it's not just science fiction.
Okay.
And the same with this book. You can call it speculative fiction or you can call it science fiction, but there's no way to classify, like, most of science fiction as science fiction and then classify this as not science fiction, but those other things still as science fiction. But I do understand where he's coming from in this way, because sometimes things are a bit wishy-washy and a bit vague, and you're like, oh, if this was like a science fiction writer who was being like really rigorous about this, there'd have to be a bit more to it.
A bit more depth.
Well, not so more depth, but a bit more rigor to the science, if you know what I mean. Like things would have to be explained a bit more.
Yeah, like, you know, The Time Traveler's Wife is speculative fiction. It is not science fiction.
No, it is science fiction because it's got time travel, and almost by definition, time travel makes something science fiction.
Okay.
But yes, it can also be speculative fiction, or can also be creepy romance. Things can be lots of things. I always think a genre is a label that you attach to something.
Yes.
Rather than a file that you put it in.
A box.
So you're talking about Gmail keywords or, you know, whatever
labels,
it is. Labels.
Yeah.
Rather than, you know, folders in a computer where one file can only be in one folder.
Yes.
It's like, no, genres or things, a work stands as its own and then you can attach labels to it.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have to be exclusively science fiction or speculative fiction. But again, like I say, this I would call science fiction. There's no reason not to call it science fiction.
And what is this?
I Who Have Never Known Men.
You know this book?
Well, Ryan told me about it. He said, I have actually seen this book listed. You know, whatever. Same, similar kind of things. Best books in translation, influential feminist science fiction. You know, it comes up. This book comes up a few times. But it does exist a little bit outside the spectrum of normal science fiction, mostly because it's by Jacqueline Harpman, who I will now look up here. Jacqueline Harpman was born in Etterbeek, Belgium in 1929. Being half Jewish, the family moved to Casablanca when the Nazis invaded and returned home after the war. So she studied French literature, mm-hmm. studied as a psychologist, published in French, and this is actually a book in translation. So this is a translated book here.
Okay.
So it's by Ross Schwartz, is the translator.
Okay.
And apparently Ross Schwartz,
yeah.
Let's just click on that name as well. Let's see who comes up there. He does things like The Little Prince by Antoine de Saint-Exupéry. How do you say that name? Antoine de Saint-Exupéry. Either way, just saying like...
Antoine de Saint-Exupéry.
Good. Very good. Anyway.
Without reading it, just from the...
Apparently known as a very good translator from French into English.
Because that is a French treasure. Like, if you get to translate that one...
Well, I mean, there might be other translations of it, but I'm just saying,
sure,
I have read more books by this translator mm-hmm. than Jacqueline Hartman.
Yes.
In other words, two. Two books by the translator. Yeah. I who have never known men, got 4.24 stars here on the community, general reads, you know, general
Goodreads
community. And like I say, that always goes from 3.5 stars to 4.5 stars. So if you're at 4.25 stars, generally, this is a very well-regarded book.
Yeah, that's true. How many ratings is it in total there?
49,000 ratings.
Okay, yeah. So pretty yeah. good. And also, I think on Goodreads, isn't there like a place where you can literally see the tags that other people have put this book
yeah,
under?
Yeah, yeah. Let's have a look. Fiction, science fiction, dystopia, feminism, literary fiction, fantasy, classics, adult, France, and novels.
Mm-hmm.
And there's lots more as well, but those yeah. are the top ones here as well. You know, feminism, translated, fantasy, classics. Yeah, but once you get down after those top ones, you know, these yeah. top ones, it doesn't help.
No,
you know what I mean?
But enough people have also put the label science fiction and dystopia on it.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, of course, because it's dystopian science fiction,
yeah.
Post-apocalyptic okay. stuff like that.
So is this going to be your next read?
No, I've read it.
Oh, you have read it?
Why do you think I'm talking about this? This is the book I'm going to review.
You have just read this. This is the book we are talking
this
about.
This is the book that we're talking about now.
No, well, that didn't come across.
Okay,
to
so
me
I finished this book.
Yet.
I finished
okay.
this book a few days ago.
Good.
Like at the weekend or whatever.
Okay, yes.
And it's very good.
Yeah.
I just want to say, so I'm just putting that out there. Like,
yes.
I don't think I've even got any criticisms of this.
Oh, wow.
But it's not a 5-star book.
Yeah.
But I don't have any criticisms of it because the book that it's trying to be, it's a very good example of that.
Okay.
Now, let me just say this. I only made a few notes here.
And we agreed it's going to be a short podcast.
And it's a short podcast. I've already put an alarm on for 20 minutes. So after 20 minutes. And
okay.
we're already 8 minutes in, or 8.5 minutes into that. So also in January and February, I was reading some other books. Moby Dick, but let's put that aside because that was all there. And then I was like, oh, let's do The Road. And in The Road, it's a post-apocalyptic book with some weird thing that's not really explained. And there's only a few characters left alive and they're not named. And one of them is the father. No, it's the man and the boy, isn't it,
yes,
in that one?
The man and the boy.
I also read The Bear, which is a more recent book, which again, kind of in dialogue with The Road.
It's the man and...
It was the father and the daughter, or the
father,
man and the girl.
Yeah.
So man and the girl, the man and the boy.
Yeah.
Or the father and the son, or whatever. Father and the son, or the father and the girl, whatever it is. But they were unnamed characters, because in a post-apocalyptic world, when there's not very many characters around, and there's just one of each thing to talk about, you don't need names.
Yeah.
You just need a noun, because a proper noun is only handy if there's more than one of the thing that it is a proper noun of. So if there's only one child, you can just call it the child.
Yeah.
This book is literally the third book in a row, except for Moby Dick, but the third book in a row, which I was reading all the way, the third book in a row, which is like post-apocalyptic, unexplained apocalypse, which now it reduces the population of the world down to a very, very small amount.
Yeah.
And in both of these, only one child remaining. In one of them, it was called the boy.
Yeah.
Another one, it was called the girl.
Mm-hmm.
And in this one is called the child.
Oh,
so
very
it's
good.
A first person narrator, so it doesn't really come up very much, but
okay.
There's lots of women. So this is what happens is you wake up and you're in a cage with 40 women. There's 40 women in a cage.
Okay.
And they can all talk to each other, but they've all been drugged and have kind of lost their memory and nobody's really sure what's going on. And everyone agrees that you're the only one, you're the only girl who's in there who's like only 4 years old.
Oh, so you are the child.
Yeah, with our first person narrator, wow, our first so person protagonist.
This is a book written out from the perspective of a four-year-old child.
No, it's someone who's much older than that looking back at their life and saying, my first memory is I'm in a cage. And it does that clever thing that it doesn't really explain straight away what's going on. It's sort of like, oh, the women are having, like the women, because everyone else is like in their 20s, 30s, 40s and much older than that.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, you're obviously a mistake, because when they are rounding up women to put in this cage, you have to, why is there a girl here? So 39 women and one very young girl.
Okay.
And so this book is kind of in like three sections, let's say. And the first section is like inside this cage.
Yeah.
And there are men, guards who come in three at a time and walk around, and they have whips. And if you do anything, you're not allowed to touch each other. If you touch someone else, you get the whip cracks next to you. And if you do anything at all, like that's, try and speak to them, whatever, the whip will, they'll crack the whip through the bars of the cage and like separate you out and things like that.
Oh.
So it's pretty creepy and pretty crazy, but yeah. They get fed every day. They bring it. There's a water spigot and a hot plate in the middle of the cage. So they push aside all the mattresses and they're given food with pot. And they have pots and pans and things like that.
Okay.
So they're given vegetables and given meat and things like that. So,
but only men.
No, only women in the cage.
No. The people on the outside.
Guards. Oh yeah. At any one time, there's three guards.
Okay.
So the first section of this book is from telling the story. It kind of opens with like a frame story. Like, this is years later. I'm going to spend a few months and write this book. So we know that she's like much later in life.
She made it through.
She made it through, and she's writing. So she's got writing material.
Yeah.
So it's her looking back at what it's like to grow up as a young child. And then in a cage with only other women to talk to, and then kind of go through puberty, but her like puberty is like delayed or stunted in some way, so she doesn't
ever.
Because
all these kind of things have effects on
either way, like drugs, effects, whatever.
Body.
And trying to, and like most of that first section of the book is like her saying, all the women keep talking about stuff and I don't understand it, because she's never known life outside of this room.
Right.
It reminds me of there's a book, but also I haven't read the book, but there's a movie called The Room or Room, and it's about a small child who was born in a room because a woman had been able to. Did you watch that one? I can't remember.
No. This is
anyway,
not the kind
not
of.
A, not a. It's actually a very good movie, but again, I remember the people talking about the book, and that's like you start reading the book, and it's not clear that there's that someone is actually. A child of rape in a bunker under the ground or something like that.
Oh,
so anyway,
that's
the first section of this book. It's not the first third, but it's like the first section.
Yeah.
And then something happens where as the guards are delivering some food, an alarm goes off, and I'm not giving too much away here because it's not fully explained, but the guards go up and they drop the keys and they leave the bunker.
Right.
Because it's kind of, there's no light or anything, and the women call it a bunker. And they get the keys and they go out of the bunker.
Yeah.
The 40 women, or the 39 women and the young girl go out of the bunker. And then the next section of the book, or the next two sections of the book, is what they do outside. They're trying to find other people, go exploring. Mm-hmm. And they find also in the bunker, there's lots of food. There's like a massive freezer in there.
Well, it needs to be if they got fed regularly.
Big freezer. And they're like, do we go and look for other people? Or do we stay here and just eat the food here?
Yeah.
And so there's like 39 women and one girl. And as she's growing up, 40 women.
Yeah.
It's about their life out in the open. And some of them are older and some of them are younger. And because this book is told over a long time, not everyone survives. And it's kind of sad. But it's in this post-apocalyptic world.
Yeah.
Which I'm not going to go into any details about that. But there's stuff going on, which I won't go into. But the rest of the book is about a group of women and what they're doing there alone and what else they find out and about there.
Okay. Can you scroll down on this page again so I can see how the title of the book is again?
It's called I Who Have Never Known Men.
Okay.
And a lot of the writing, a lot of the framing of this is sort of like, I who have never seen a roller coaster. Who have never done that. You know, it's sort of like the first person is referring to herself quite often.
Okay.
Without her name. She doesn't have a name.
Yeah.
So not having a name means something in this case, because everyone just calls her the child.
Right.
and they treat her completely different from everybody else. And this, you remember what I said before about when I was reviewing The Bear, and there was this, like, yeah. As I was going through, I was like, 5-star book or 4-star book. Yeah. And I read somebody else's review. I was like 50% of the way through, they're like, 5-star book. Yeah. And like 70% of the way, 2-star book. Yeah. You get 95% of the way through, 1-star. Why am I reading this? I want to pack it in.
Yeah.
One of the things that really got to it was very tedious. The whole, there was a lot of tedium there.
Yeah.
But also what disappointed me the most about the book is that so she gets through the situation and then skip forward 60 years later and she's an old woman.
Again. Okay.
And I was like, how can the book be that? Like, how can it be a book where it feels like important stuff is happening and then all of the things that would show how much it's impacted her as a person and how she's changed as a person by this very difficult stuff that she's going through in this post-apocalyptic world where it's difficult to get food and, you know, her father dies just or people salute, dying around her and she's literally the only person left in the world. How will that impact her? And, you know, she can read because, of course, there's books there and things like that. Where did this story come from? What's this story? Is it her writing her story later and all that kind of stuff? And then you get to that, you know, this was like a 4-hour audiobook.
The bear,
and then you get to like 3 hours and 59 minutes, and then the last 3 minutes are sort of like, and now she's an old woman, and I'm like, you can't just skip forward from when she's 14 years old through to when she's 60 years old and just miss all of that out. One star or whatever I said, I can't remember what it was, but I enjoyed other parts of it, but it was such a disappointing thing that a character only changes when they experience something that's difficult or whatever that impacts their life.
Yeah.
And then you see how they act differently to what they did before when it hadn't impacted their life.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There has to be a change, and then you have to see how they're different afterwards.
Yes.
This book gave me all of that. I Who Have Never Known Men.
Yeah.
Is the opposite to The Bear.
Oh, okay.
In that it gets to that part where she's 14 years old.
Yeah.
And in The Bear, they're like, skip forward. She's 76 years old and she's too old and she dies.
Yeah.
And is she the last person left alive? Yeah. Yes or no?
Yeah.
And in this book, it does the same thing. But actually, the majority of this book is her going through that stuff and then what she's like after that stuff. You know? And when she's alone in this book, you're like, I know, like, you kind of know how she's going to act. Or, like, it's interesting to see how she's acting because we've been with her all the way through, like, when she's with people, when she's not with people, when she's back with people, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Okay.
And it's actually good.
But it also does a big age gap skip.
No, it doesn't. That's the whole point. No. It's literally step by step, season by season, year by year.
Okay.
You know.
So, but you keep seeing, like, getting her story after she's 14.
Yes, that's my whole point.
Okay. Well, that didn't come across.
This is written when she's older and she's looking back at her whole life.
Okay.
Like when she's learned to write, because she can't do that in a cage where there's nothing and they're having to wear like bits of fabric stitched together with human hair and things like that. Anyway. All of that is really, really good.
Okay.
All of it's good.
Yes.
Also, it's really well written.
Yeah.
In French. I'm guessing it's really well written because it was good enough that people decided to translate it. And also, the translation, whatever this guy is doing, Ross Schwartz is doing, very good at it, I guess, because this is it's a very good book, very well written.
Okay.
And you can tell that by if you go over to Jacqueline Hartman, her page, and there's quotes, and all of these are just quotes that people have pulled out of this one book, because I think there's only one other book of hers that's been translated into English.
Okay.
So yes, lots of people get this.
So people are impressed by the language and the words and the sentences and the quotes. Cool.
Yeah, it's sort of like this. But I had only known the absurd, and I think that made me profoundly different from then. So it's somebody who hasn't just never known men, but she's the only one who wasn't there or doesn't remember anything from before.
Right.
The world, like from the before times.
But she knows that, and she's very aware of that, and she's very aware of her. That's like a very significant otherness.
Yep. So when I was talking about before, like, what's the themes of the book? Oh, my goodness, this is all about... Oh, that's the thing. So let's do two more points and then I'll wrap it up.
Okay.
This might as well be called womanhood or women, you know, like, because it's a book about 40 women and someone who isn't quite yet a woman not understanding what it's like to be around women. So it feels very well observed that the group dynamics, again, I'm not a woman, but sometimes you see this from the outside, the group dynamics of women and the different age Rangers and what they talk about and the friendships and the rivalries and the them falling out and making up and bonding together and all that kind of stuff. But it's all this, it's very well observed by this like stranger in a strange land kind of thing, by someone who isn't in that group, is too young, but isn't a male, but is a but isn't female, but is shunned from the group because she's sort of saying, oh, what are you talking about, like men? And she doesn't understand what sex is. And they're like, ah, there's no point in even telling you about sex. And so like a big chunk of the book is just sort of like, I don't what does it mean? Like, I don't, like, you know, literally just not understanding what love is, not understanding what sex is and all this kind of stuff. Yep. And so a lot of it is like that the really good writing is somebody who has doesn't understand what love is, has never really had love explained to them, hasn't had all the socialization of like love songs, never heard a love song, never read a love poem, never heard a love story, never wrote a romance. And then kind of like trying to piece together what love might be from overheard conversations between 39 other women.
Yeah. And her experience is growing up in a cage with women who have experienced things that she has never experienced. That's a really, really interesting concept.
Yeah. I was forced to acknowledge too late, much too late, that I too had loved and that I was capable of suffering and that I was human after all. Like some really nice writing here. Really good writing.
Sounds
really
very good.
All right. My final point.
Yeah.
Which is coming back to back solving in non-rigorous science fiction, which is why I could call it speculative fiction.
Yeah.
One of my complaints was, I forgot to mention this on the podcast, then I mentioned it afterwards. So I read the Wikipedia page for The Road. Let me bring it up here.
Mm-hmm.
The Road. Here we go. That's the film. So let's look at the novel of the same name. And I didn't mention this because I don't think I'd read the Wikipedia page for The Road before I did the review of it.
Yeah.
But here we go. Adaptations, development history. It said, in an interview, McCarthy, this is Cormac McCarthy talking about The Road, he described conversations that he had with his brother about the different scenarios for an apocalypse. One of the scenarios involves survivors turning to cannibalism. When everything's gone, the only thing left to eat is each other. When everything's gone, the only thing left to eat is each other. So for him to make cannibalism like the option, like that it's possible to happen, to be honest, that's where I stopped reading the book when I realized it was going to be a cannibalism scene.
Yeah.
I realized, that's what makes the world building unsatisfying, because he had to have a thing, he had to come up with something where there's people alive, there's humans alive, but food is really scarce, and also all animals have died, so you can't eat the animals, all plants have died, so you can't eat the plants. Like, everything has to be dead and grey and dead and boring and dead to force you to be in a situation where cannibalism is an obvious option or is an option.
Yes.
Unlike, say, a Chilean rugby team in a plane crash.
In the Andes or wherever.
Or the Raft of the Medusa. Yes. Oh, I think I put this in my Goodreads review of The Road. So, but what I'm saying is it's unsatisfying when all you want to do is, when everything's gone, the only thing left to eat is each other. All right, so I want to have cannibalism. So everything has to be gone. Well, people will be able to eat cans. Well, yeah, they'll finish up the cans and then they'll can eat, you know, corn. No, can't do that. Bananas. No, no bananas left anymore. Well, killing animals. Nope, no animals left. Eating plants. No, nothing. Like, so you get to the point where the whole world building is like back solving for a cannibalism scene that you want.
It's
unsatisfying because they're like a tragedy happened, like a post-apocalypse, and lots of people reviewing the book are like, it doesn't make sense. Like, it never explains why everything's dead, but
and humans are still alive.
Humans survive. Were they all in bunkers? Were they in swimming pools when it happened? You know, like, what virus kills all but a few humans, but then leaves, like, but all rats and all cows or whatever like that?
Yeah.
Or maybe the cats and the cows died because all the grass died. Like, I don't even... But it's unsatisfying and makes you feel like, if this was a science fiction author, they would have written this better.
Mm-hmm.
And also, if it was just a better author, it would have been written better.
And... Jacqueline.
Yeah, yeah. What's similar her name? Kind of thing. Yeah. Back solving for how to get a group of women to be the last group of women alive that they know about.
Yeah.
And when they get out, they're like, "Oh, we need to find other people alive."
Yeah.
I'm not going to give away who they find or what they find as they go out and about, or if they find.
I don't even know.
They do find. They find stuff. They find things. They do find other people. But the point is, like, how do you? how do you make it so there's only 40 women left alive?
Yeah, you need to create a situation that makes sense, that this story could play out.
This book doesn't make sense. No, let me put it this way. The world building could be seen as unsatisfying because it feels a bit too convenient that someone is like, hey, I want to write a story about women and that there's only 40 women left alive and one of them's a child and they have to go out and about. And how do I make this work? And how do I make the world building and the themes of trying to find out about the world, and it's difficult to find out about the world. If one of the main themes is it's very difficult to find things out from first principles, to be honest, I would have been disappointed if you get to the end of the book and she's sort of like, and then I found the command bunker and went down and how everything had gone down was like played back, and she plays back some, you know, black box recorder and it explains how the world ended. I would have been really disappointed if that happened, because it would have like...
Okay, so that didn't happen.
That didn't happen.
Okay.
But what does happen is like, maybe it's at the opposite end. I'm just saying that for a novel which is about difficulty finding answers, I wish there had been some answers that me as a human being with real world who has known men and has known women and does know our history, I wish there had been a little bit more for me to discover in the background about how the world got to how it is.
Right.
Which she wouldn't be able to understand, but I wish there had just been a few more crumbs thrown in my direction.
I see.
I could have been satisfied to be like, oh, okay, yeah, it's not this, it's not that, it's
not
this. She
found something that she can't explain, but you as a reader would immediately understand what was going on.
Yeah, and there wasn't that, wasn't that either.
So the situation, the background story is basically not explained.
Some of it's explained, but there's enough left open that it feels like Jacqueline Hartman is back solving for the story that she wants to sell rather than making a rigorous world and then putting characters in it. Like the bear feels very much like, okay, this is post-apocalyptic and there's lots of different things that the bear could be, but it's not worried about that. It's just sort of like, what happens if there's only two people left alive? And when one of them dies, the other one thinks they're talking to animals, you know.
Yeah.
That's fine. That's no problem at all. And I had less issues with that.
Yeah.
But this key thing that I'm talking about now is the reason why I think Ryan said, I'd say the term speculative fiction might be a better fit than science fiction.
Okay.
For the world building, which in the hands of someone who's typically a science fiction author, they would be a little bit more rigorous about that. But because this is much more it's much more thematic and literary and character based and humanity based rather than what are the rules of my science fiction world? How does this spaceship work?
Yeah.
You know, how do we get to this other planet?
The dystopia is a setting, and it is not about the dystopia. It's about the story and the ideas and
so as long as you're not too worried about the disconnect of how do we get from here to there, you'll enjoy this book, and I think I'll just put that out there.
I try and find it? Maybe I can read it in French.
You could probably read it in French. It probably in German as well. I'd be very surprised if this wasn't translated into German as well.
Okay,
but I would say this English translation is really good.
Okay.
Like, again, this is one of the best written, enjoyable... I would say enjoyable. And then I'm saying, actually, it's not enjoyable. This is a very sad book. This is post-apocalyptic, you know, a very dwindling population.
Mm.
And how everything happens is heartbreaking and pretty rough at times.
Okay.
And I would say it's depressing, but it's like beautifully depressing. And it's exactly the book that I wanted.
Yeah.
From like if the bear had been 2 hours longer and did a bit more of this at the end, I would have given the bear 4 stars.
Yeah,
but I didn't. I think
but
I gave
got,
it like
you got what you wanted from the bear. You got in this book.
Yeah, I gave the bear 2 stars, and this book I'm giving like 4.5 stars.
But this is
because it is really good.
But it's really funny. You read basically 3 books set in a dystopia,
post-apocalyptic dystopia.
Post-apocalyptic.
Well, I'd say
dystopia.
The bear isn't a dystopia. It's just post-apocalyptic.
Yes.
There's. Oh,
and so you read 3 books with a different view and a different idea and a different kind of perspective on the setting.
Yeah.
It's quite interesting. Let's see how you're gonna.
three books where the main character doesn't have, or one of the main characters doesn't have a name, and it's just the man, the child, the boy, the girl, the daughter, the son, the child.
That's funny.
And in here, because it's women, it's none of them are called the mother or the matriarch or the whatever labels that you put on women. All of the other women do have names, okay. But so that's fine.
So where do you go? Where do you go on next? What's the next direction?
The next direction
of book that you're going to do?
Oh, well, actually, I'm heading over, and I was just looking through the Audible free library, and I found Walking to Aldebaran, which is by Adrian Tchaikovsky, and for the last three nights in a row, I've put that on and fallen asleep within a minute and a half. So I just haven't managed to get into it. Okay. But it's actually quite short. It's like only like 4 hours long. So it's another 3 hours and 36 minutes. So I may or may not review that because it is kind of like novella length rather than novel.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm just checking out now, is Walking to Aldebaran. But then, hey, maybe I'll go for this one. Amatka by Karin Tidbeck. Let me just look it up now here.
And that's recommended by Ryan again as well.
Yeah. And he just, and tell you something, if you recommend a book that I give 4.5 stars to and is like the best book that I've, and one of the most enjoyable and meaningful and like beautiful books that I've read recently.
Yeah.
Yeah. Give it. Like, again, looking here, 4.24 stars by the community rating, like the average community rating out of 49,000 people.
Yeah.
And 8,005.
That is quite telling.
It's good. Like, yes. look at this graph here.
Oh,
like,
wow.
Look
That's
at that
not
graph.
A bell curve.
It's not a bell curve. It's very...
it's a linear.
Like, 45% of people give this 5 stars. Yeah. 36% of people give it 4 stars. And then it's a big drop off down to 13% giving 3 stars. I understand if people aren't into this. And I understand if some people find it disappointing. But I thought it was just really good. And it's cool. And it's so fun to discover something like this. Like a book from the 90s, which you've been... Again, I've just seen it on lists.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Okay. It's just on these lists of like, oh, this, you know, unknown science fiction from the 90s. But I guess maybe because it's in translation and, you know... I'm not saying one thing one way or the other. It's just it's never been recommended to me in a way which I've like looked up to see how highly rated it is. And it's highly rated.
I'm sure there's like other books out there which either are not translated or are not so much on the radar. And if it's not translated into English or not a good translation or something, it can just get lost. It can be out of your realm.
This is a good book. Look, here's some things. Emily, Books with Emily Fox on YouTube. Books with Emily Fox on YouTube. Do yourself a favor and read this. The second half of this book blew my mind. Very bleak, but it will haunt me forever. I very carefully didn't say anything that happened in the second half. You know, I want to leave that up for people to do. Daniela gave it 5 stars. I, who have never read a book like this.
All right, that's good. A good one.
Emily gave it 5 stars. 4.5 stars, actually. Wow, this tiny, disquieting book carries a sadness that the most popular tearjerkers could never hope to capture. So here's the thing. I will always enjoy a book. Like, again, I don't have any complaints about this, except for the fact I'm not giving it 5 stars. I'm giving it 4.5 stars because, again, it didn't give, like, I didn't cry.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like, for me to give a book 5 stars, like, you know, some of these other books that were mentioned, like some of these other kind of literary, more literary speculative fiction books that I've given 5 stars to, which I can, actually, I can sort by star rating here. So for example, Slaughterhouse-Five, cried 3 times in that. Flowers and Algernon makes me cry all the time here. The Prestige, maybe not cried. The Man in the High Castle, those books I'm just sort of like really impressed with as well.
Yes.
So a lot of these 5-star books that I'm giving this stuff to, The Sparrow, cried in that one.
Mm.
Nine Fox Gambit, was mostly just impressed by that, you know.
Yeah.
So some of these other books that you've got to do stuff to me with these books.
Yeah.
And The
this
Wild
not
Shore.
Quite there, but obviously close.
Yeah,
enough.
Yeah.
So 4.5 stars, and so the other book that you just put in.
Oh, what's that?
What's that? The what's that? How is that rated?
Amatka. I don't know. I didn't search for it on Goodreads. But let's. I will now do this.
Amatka.
Let's type in Karin Tidbeck. It's... Oh, no.
Mm.
3.79 overall.
Okay, it's close
and
to
it's,
4.
What's that? What language is that? Swedish? Locus Award
Danish?
Nominee for Best First Novel... a nominee award for translation. So I don't even know where this Amatka is from, but there is a Kindle about the author Karin Tidbeck. I'm guessing like Swedish. Yeah, Stockholm, Swedish. I was looking at the language and trying to tell from the accents, which is
right.
All right, 35 minutes. Let's wrap it up there.
Okay, so is that going to be your next book? Maybe.
Maybe. Again, I'm going to read this. I've got a flight tomorrow. I've got like 2-3.5 hour flights tomorrow.
Yeah.
You go, oh, Spain, that's not too far away. 3 hours to get there.
Oh, yeah.
And then you get to Madrid and I'm like, oh, no, I'm going to Tenerife. It's another 3 hours away.
Tenerife is like the Canary Islands. They're not Spain. They're like Africa.
Yeah, you're not flying to Spain if you go to Tenerife. It's a long way. Anyway, this is a few times now. I've been here, I think this is my fourth time to Tenerife in the last 8 months or something like that. So many times now to Tenerife.
And you've got lots of time
out what's
your next book.
So maybe I will go for, I'll just add this to my... add this to my wish list, and that's like a 6 hour book. So maybe I'll do Amatka, and I've got this other Eugene Tchaikovsky book to go, and I'm going to look for some others as well. I've got, it says 2 credits available here.
That's nice.
So send me your book suggestions, luke@juggler.net, which will be really cool.
Yeah.
And I'm going to just check out maybe some other library books. That's my project for this evening. Look, you check this out on my packing list. I have a cruise packing list, but check this out. Time machine backup, archive photos and videos, print bag labels, print show running order, cut hair, check weather at destination, check into first flights and stuff like this. But then you check this out here. Audible credits and books for flight. And that's the only thing I've not checked off on my trip tomorrow.
Awesome. So only one thing missing.
Everything. Oh, and FFP2 face mask is that's another thing to put on there, because some people still wear face masks.
Yeah.
Me. And Juliana, the last flights that we took was just you and me,
wasn't it? Nobody else,
but we're like, I think now it's just a placebo on these flights, you know?
Yeah.
Because nowhere else, it's only when we're on the plane do we wear the masks. And
I don't know. It's really tricky.
Makes me feel good.
It's a really tricky decision, but also it's really not fun to be sick.
It isn't. And I've only been sick like twice in the last 3.5-4 years now.
We can keep it that way.
Yeah, let's check it out.
Okay, then.
That's it. Thanks a lot for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
Goodbye.